and sags, and she sways unsteadily as she makes her way down the ramp.
"Not the greatest specimen,"
Mac says,
"but I got her cheap from this bankrupt circus out west. They had her shipped over from Africa. Only had her a month before they went bust."
He gestures toward Ruby.
"Thing is, people love babies. Baby elephants, baby gorillas. Heck, give me a baby alligator and I could make a killing."
Stella ushers Ruby toward her domain. Mac and the two men follow. At Stella's door, Ruby hesitates. Mac gives Ruby a shove, but she doesn't budge.
"Doggone it, get a clue, Ruby,"
he mutters. But Ruby isn't moving, and neither is Stella. Mac grabs a broom. He raises it. Instantly, Stella steps in front of Ruby to shield her.
"Get in the cage, both of you!"
Mac shouts. Stella stares at Mac, considering. Gently but firmly, using her trunk, she nudges Ruby into her domain. Only then does Stella enter. Mac slams the door shut with a clang. I see two trunks entwined. I hear Stella whispering.
"Poor kid," says Bob. "Welcome to the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade, home of the one and only Ivan."
Old News. When Julia comes, she sits by Stella's domain and watches the new baby. She barely talks to me. Stella doesn't talk to me either. She is too busy nuzzling Ruby. She is cute, little Ruby, with her ears flapping like palm leaves. But I am handsome and strong. Bob trots a circle around my belly before settling down in just the right spot.
"Give it up, Ivan,"
he says.
"You're old news."
Julia gets out a piece of paper and a pencil. I can see that she is drawing Ruby. I move to the corner of my domain to pout. Bob grumbles. He doesn't like it when I disrupt his naps. "Homework," Julia's father scolds. Julia sighs and puts her drawing aside. I grunt, and Julia glances in my direction.
"Poor old Ivan,"
she says.
"I've been ignoring you, haven't I?"
I grunt again, a dignified, indifferent grunt. Julia thinks for a moment, then smiles. She walks over to my domain, to the spot in the corner where the glass is broken. She slides papers through. She rolls a pencil across my cement floor.
"You can draw the baby elephant, too,"
Julia says. I bite the pencil in half with my magnificent teeth. Then I eat some paper. Tricks. Even after Julia and her father leave, I try to keep sulking, but it's no use. Gorillas are not by nature pouters. "Stella," I call. "It's a full moon, did you see?" Sometimes when we are lucky, we catch a glimpse of the moon through the skylight in the food court.
"I did,"
Stella says. She is whispering, and I realize that Ruby must be asleep. "Is Ruby all right?" I ask.
"She's too thin, Ivan,"
Stella says.
"Poor baby. She was in that truck for days. Mac bought her from a circus the same way he bought me. But she hadn't been there long. She was born in the wild, like us."
"Will she be okay?" I ask. Stella doesn't answer my question.
"The circus trainers chained her to the floor, Ivan. All 4 feet, 23 hours a day."
I puzzle over why this would be a good idea. I always try to give humans the benefit of the doubt. "Why would they do that?" I finally ask.
"To break her spirit,"
Stella says.
so she could learn to balance on a pedestal, so she could stand on her hind legs, so a dog could jump on her back while she walked in mindless circles.
I hear her tired voice and think of all the tricks Stella has learned. Introductions. When I awake the next morning, I see a little trunk poking out between the bars of Stella's domain.
Hello,
says a small, clear voice.
I'm Ruby.
She waves her trunk. Hello, I say. I'm Ivan.
Are you a monkey?
Ruby asks. Certainly not. Bob's ears perk up, although his eyes stay closed.
He's a gorilla,
he says,
and I am a dog of uncertain heritage. Why did the dog climb your tummy?
Ruby asks.
Because it's there,
Bob murmurs. Is Stella awake? I ask.
Aunt Stella's asleep,
Ruby says.
Her foot is hurting, I think.
Ruby turns her head. Her eyes are like Stella's, black and long-lashed, bottomless lakes fringed by tall grass.
When is breakfast?
She asks. Soon, I say, when the mall opens and the workers come.
Where?
Ruby twists her head in the other direction.
Where are the other elephants?
It's just you and Stella, I say. And for some reason, I feel we have let her down.
Are there more of you?
Not, I say, at the moment. Ruby picks up a piece of hay and considers it.
Do you have a mom and a dad?
Well, I used to.
Everyone has parents,
Bob explains.
It's unavoidable. Before the circus, I used to live with my mom and my aunts and my sisters and my cousins,
Ruby says. She drops the hay, picks it up, twirls it.
They're dead.
I don't know what to say. I am not really enjoying this conversation, but I can see that Ruby isn't done talking. To be polite, I say, I'm sorry to hear that, Ruby.
Humans killed them,
she says.
Who else?
Bob asks, and we all fall silent. Stella and Ruby. All morning, Stella strokes Ruby, pats her, smells her. They flap their ears. They rumble and roar. They sway as if they're dancing. Ruby clings to Stella's tail. She slips under Stella's belly. Sometimes they just lean into each other, their trunks twirled together like jungle vines. Stella looks so happy. It's more fun to watch than any nature show I've ever seen on TV. Home of the One and Only Ivan. George and Mac are out by the highway. I can see them through one of my windows. They are next to each other on tall wooden ladders, leaning against the billboard that tells the cars to stop and visit the one and only Ivan, Mighty Silverback. George has a bucket and a long-handled broom. Mac has pieces of paper. He slaps one against the billboard. George dips the broom into the bucket. He wets the paper with the liquid from the bucket, and somehow the paper stays in place. They put up many pieces before they are done. When they climb down from the ladders, I see that they've added a picture of a little elephant to the billboard. The elephant has a lopsided smile. She is wearing a red hat, and her tail curls like a pig's. She doesn't look like Ruby. She doesn't even look like an elephant. I've only known Ruby one day, and I could have drawn her better. Art lesson. Ruby asks a lot of questions. She says,
Ivan, why is your tummy so big?
And,
have you ever seen a green giraffe?
and...
Can you get me one of those pink clouds that the humans are eating?
When Ruby asks...
What is that on your wall?
I explain that it's a jungle. She says the flowers have no scent, and the waterfall has no water, and the trees have no roots. I am aware of that, I say. It's art, a picture made with paint.
Do you know how to make art?
Ruby asks. Yes, I do, I say, and I puff up my chest just a little. I've always been an artist. I love drawing.
Why do you love it?
Ruby asks. I pause. I've never talked to anyone about this before. When I'm drawing a picture, I feel quiet inside. Ruby frowns.
Quiet is boring.
Not always. Ruby scratches the back of her neck with her trunk.
What do you draw anyway?
Bananas, mostly. Things in my domain. My drawings sell at the gift store for $25 a piece with a frame.
What's a frame?
Ruby asks.
What's a dollar? What's a gift store?
I close my eyes. I'm a little sleepy, Ruby.
Have you ever driven a truck?
Ruby asks. I don't answer.
Ivan?
Ruby asks.
Can Bob fly?
A memory flashes past, surprising me. I think of my father, snoring peacefully under the sun, while I try every trick I know to wake him. Perhaps, I realize, he wasn't really such a sound sleeper after all. Treat. How's that foot, old girl? George asks Stella. Stella pokes her trunk between the bars. She inspects George's right shirt pocket for the treat he brings her every night without fail. George doesn't always bring me treats. Stella's his favorite, but I don't mind. She's my favorite, too. Stella sees that George's pocket is empty. She gives George a frustrated nudge with her trunk, and Julia giggles. Stella moves to George's left pocket and discovers a carrot. Nimbly, she removes it. Mac walks past.
Toilet's plugged up in the men's bathroom, he says. Big mess.
I'll take care of it,
George sighs. Mac turns to leave.
Before you go, Mac,
George says,
you might want to take a look at Stella's foot. I think it's infected again.
Darn thing never does heal up, right?
Mac rubs his eyes.
I'll keep an eye on it. Money's tight, though. Can't be calling the vet every time she sneezes.
George strokes Stella's trunk. She inspects his pockets one more time, just in case.
Sorry, girl,
George says, as he watches Mac walk away. Elephant jokes.
Ivan? Bob?
I blink. The dawn sky is a smudge of gray flecked with pink, like a picture drawn with two crayons. I can just make out Ruby in the shadows, waving hello with her trunk.
Are you awake?
Ruby asks.
We are now, says Bob. Aunt Stella's still asleep, and I don't want to wake her because she said her foot was hurting, but I'm really, really...
Ruby pauses for a breath.
Really bored.
Bob opens one eye.
You know what I do when I'm bored?
What?
Ruby asks eagerly. Bob closes his eye.
I sleep.
It's a little early, Ruby, I say.
I'm used to getting up early.
Ruby wraps her trunk around one of the bars on her door.
At my old circus, we always got up when it was still dark, and then we had breakfast, and we walked in a circle, and then they chained my feet up, and that really hurt.
Ruby falls silent. Instantly, Bob is snoring.
Ivan?
Ruby asks.
Do you know any jokes? I especially like jokes about elephants.
Well, Let me see. I heard Mac tell one once. I yawn. How can you tell that an elephant has been in the refrigerator?
How?
By the footprints in the butter. Ruby doesn't react. I sit up on my elbows, trying not to disturb Bob. Get it?
What's a refrigerator?
Ruby asks. It's a human thing. A cold box with a door. They put food inside.
They put food in the door? Or food in the box? And is it a big box?
Ruby asks.
Or a little box?
I can see this is going to take a while. So I sit up all the way. Bob slides off, grumbling. I reach for my pencil, the one I snapped in half with my teeth. Here, I say. I'll draw you a picture of one. In the dim light, it takes me a minute to find a piece of the paper Julia gave me. The page is a little damp and has a smear of something orange on it. I think it's from a tangerine. I try my best to make a refrigerator. The broken pencil is not cooperating, but I do what I can. By the time I'm done, the first streaks of morning sun have appeared in flashy cartoon colors. I hold up my picture for Ruby to see. She studies it intently, her head turned so that one black eye is trained on my drawing.
Wow, you made that. Is this the thing you were telling me about before, art?
Sure is. I can draw all kinds of things. I'm especially good at fruit.
Could you draw a banana right now?
Ruby asks. Absolutely. I turn the paper over and sketch.
Wow!
Ruby says again, in an awed voice when I hold up the page.
It looks good enough to eat.
She makes a happy lilting sound, an elephant laugh. It's like the song of a bird I recall from long ago. A tiny yellow bird with a voice like dancing water. Strange. I'd forgotten all about that bird. How she'd wake me every morning at dawn, when I was still curled safely in my mother's nest. It's a good feeling, making Ruby laugh. So I draw another picture, and another along the edges of the paper. An orange, a candy bar, a carrot.
What are you two up to?
Stella asks, moaning as she tries to move her sore foot. How are you this morning? I ask.
Just feeling my age,
Stella says.
I'm fine.
Ivan is making me pictures,
Ruby says.
And he told me a joke. I really like Ivan, Aunt Stella.
Stella winks at me.
Me too,
she says.
Ivan, want to hear my favorite joke?
Ruby asks.
I heard it from Maggie. She was one of the giraffes in my old circus.
Sure, I say.
It goes like this.
Ruby clears her throat.
What do elephants have that nothing else has?
Trunks, I think. But I don't answer because I don't want to ruin Ruby's fun. I don't know, Ruby, I reply. What do elephants have that nothing else has?
Baby elephants,
Ruby says. Good one, Ruby, I say, watching Stella stroke Ruby's back with her trunk.
Good one,
Stella says softly. Children. Once I asked Stella if she'd ever had any babies. She shook her head.
I never had the opportunity.
You would have made a great mother, I told her.
Thank you, Ivan,
Stella said, clearly pleased.
I like to think so. Having young ones is a big responsibility. You have to teach them how to take mud baths, of course, and emphasize the importance of fiber in their diet.
She looked away, contemplating. Elephants are excellent at contemplating.
I think the hardest part of being a parent,
Stella added after a while,
would be keeping your babies safe from harm, protecting them.
The way silverbacks do in the jungle, I said.
Exactly.
Stella nodded. You would have been good at protecting, too, I said confidently.
I'm not so sure,
Stella said, gazing at the iron bars surrounding her.
I'm not sure at all.
The parking lot. Mac and George are chatting while George cleans one of my windows.
George,
Mac says, frowning.
There's something wrong with the parking lot.
George sighs.
I'll take a look as soon as I'm done with this window. What's the problem?
There are cars in it. That's what's wrong. Cars, George!
Mac breaks into a grin.
I think things are actually starting to pick up a bit. It's gotta be the billboard. People see that baby elephant and they just have to stop and spend their hard-earned cash.
I hope so,
George says. We sure could use the business. Mac's right. I have noticed more visitors coming since he and George added the picture of Ruby to the sign. People crowd around Ruby and Stella's domain, oohing and aahing at the sight of such a tiny elephant. I gaze out at the huge sign that makes humans stop and spend their hard-earned cash. I have to admit that the picture of Ruby is rather cute, even if she doesn't look like a real elephant. I wonder if Mac could add a little red hat and a curly tail to the picture of me. Maybe then more visitors would stop by my domain. I could use a few oohs and ahs myself. Ruby's Story.
Ivan, tell me another joke, please,
Ruby begs after the 2 o'clock show. I think I may have run out of jokes, I admit.
A story, then,
Ruby says.
Aunt Stella's sleeping, and there's nothing to do.
I tap my chin. I'm trying hard to think. But when I gaze up at the food court skylight, I'm mesmerized by the elephant-colored clouds galloping past. Ruby taps her foot impatiently.
I know, I'll tell you a story, she says. A real live true one.
Good idea, I say. What's it about?
It's about me.
Ruby lowers her voice.
It's about me and how I fell into a hole, a big hole. Humans dug it.
Bob pricks his ears and joins me by the window.
I always enjoy a good digging story,
he says.
It was a big hole full of water near a village,
Ruby says.
I don't know why humans made it.
Sometimes you just need to dig for the sake of digging,
Bob reflects.
We were looking for food,
Ruby says,
my family and I, but I wandered off and got lost and went too close to the village.
Ruby looks at me, eyes wide.
I was so scared when I fell into that hole.
Of course you were, I say. I would have been scared too.
Me too,
Bob admits.
And I like holes.
The hole was huge.
Ruby pokes her trunk between the bars and makes a circle in the air.
And guess what?
She doesn't wait for an answer.
The water was all the way up to my neck, and I was sure I was going to die.
I shudder. What happened then? I ask.
I'll tell you what happened,
Bob says darkly.
They captured her and put her in a box and shipped her off, and here she is, just like they did with Stella.
He pauses to scratch an ear.
Humans. Rats have bigger hearts. Roaches have kinder souls. Flies have...
No, Bob!
Ruby interrupts.
You're wrong. These humans helped me. When they saw I was trapped, they grabbed ropes and they made loops around my neck and my tummy. The whole entire village helped. Even little kids and grandmas and grandpas. And they all pulled and pulled and...
Ruby stops. Her lashes are wet, and I know she must be remembering all the terrible feelings from that day.
"And they saved me,"
she finishes in a whisper. Bob blinks.
"They saved you?"
he repeats.
"When I was finally out, everyone cheered,"
Ruby says.
"And the children fed me fruit. And then all those humans led me back to my family. It took the whole day to find them."
"No way,"
Bob says, still doubtful.
"It's true,"
Ruby says.
"Every word."
"Of course it's true," I say.
"I've heard rescue stories like that before."
It's Stella's voice. She sounds weary. Slowly she makes her way over to Ruby.
"Humans can surprise you sometimes. An unpredictable species, Homo sapiens."
Bob still looks unconvinced.
"But Ruby's here now," he points out. "If humans are so swell, who did that to her?"
I send Bob a grumpy look. Sometimes he doesn't know when to keep quiet. Ruby swallows, and I'm afraid she's going to cry. But when she speaks, her voice is strong.
"Bad humans killed my family, and bad humans sent me here. But that day in the hole, it was humans who saved me."
Ruby leans her head on Stella's shoulder.
"Those humans were good."
"It doesn't make any sense,"
Bob says.
"I just don't understand them. I never will."
"You're not alone," I say, and I turn my gaze back to the racing gray clouds. A hit. Stella's foot hurts too much for her to do any hard tricks for the 2 o'clock show. Instead, Mac pulls her limping into the ring, where she tracks a circle in the sawdust. Ruby clings to her like a shadow. Ruby's eyes go wide when Snickers jumps on Stella's back, then leaps onto her head. At the 4 o'clock show, Stella can only get as far as the entrance to the ring. Ruby refuses to leave her side. At the 7 o'clock show, Stella stays in her domain. When Mac comes for Ruby, Stella whispers something in her ear. Ruby looks at her pleadingly, but after a moment, she follows Mac to the ring. Ruby stands alone. The bright lights make her blink. She flaps her ears. She makes her tiny trumpet sound. The humans stop eating their popcorn. They coo. They clap. Ruby is a hit. I don't know whether to be happy or sad. Worry. When Julia arrives after the show, she brings 3 thick books, 1 pencil, and something she calls magic markers.
"Here, Ivan,"
she says, and she slides 2 magic markers and a piece of paper into my domain. I like the sundown colors, red and purple, but I don't feel like coloring. I'm worried about Stella. All evening she's been quiet, and she hasn't eaten a bit of her dinner. Julia follows my gaze.
"Where is Stella, anyway?"
she asks. And she goes to Stella's gate. Ruby extends her trunk, and Julia pats it.
"Hi, baby," she says. "Is Stella all right?"
Stella is lying in a pile of dirty hay. Her breath is ragged.
"Dad?"
Julia calls.
"Could you come here a minute?"
George sets aside his mop.
"Do you think she's okay, Dad?"
Julia asks.
"Look at the way she's breathing. Can we call Mac? I think there's something really wrong."
"He must know about her." George rubs his chin. "He always knows. But a vet costs money, Jules."
"Please,"
Julia's eyes are wet.
Call him, Dad.
George gazes at Stella. He puts his hands on his hips and sighs. He calls Mac. I can't hear all of his words, but I can see George's lips tighten into a grim line. Gorilla expressions and human expressions are a lot alike. Mac says the vet's coming in the morning if Stella's not any better, he tells Julia. He says he's not going to let her die on him, not after all the money he's put into her. George strokes Julia's hair. She'll be all right. She's a tough old girl. Julia sits by Stella's domain until it's time to go home. She doesn't do her homework. She doesn't even draw. The Promise. My domain gleams with moonlight when I awake to the sound of Stella's calls.
Ivan,
Stella says in a hoarse whisper.
Ivan.
I'm here, Stella. I sit up abruptly, and Bob topples off my stomach. I run to a window. I can see Ruby next to Stella, sleeping soundly.
Ivan, I want you to promise me something,
Stella says. Anything, I say.
I've never asked for a promise before, because promises are forever, and forever is an unusually long time, especially when you're in a cage.
Domain, I correct.
Domain,
she agrees. I straighten to my full height. I promise, Stella, I say, in a voice like my father's.
But you haven't even heard what I'm asking yet,
she says, and she closes her eyes for a moment. Her great chest shudders. I promise anyway. Stella doesn't say anything for a long time.
Never mind,
she finally says.
I don't know what I was thinking. The pain is making me addled.
Ruby stirs. Her trunk moves, as if she is reaching for something that isn't there. When I say the words, they surprise me. You want me to take care of Ruby? Stella nods. A small gesture that makes her wince.
If she could have a life that's different from mine. She needs a safe place, Ivan. Not
here, I say. It would be easier to promise to stop eating, to stop breathing, to stop being a gorilla. I promise, Stella, I say. I promise it on my word as a silverback. Knowing. Before Mac, before Bob, even before Ruby, I know that Stella is gone. I know it the way you know that summer is over and winter is on its way. I just know. Stella once teased me that elephants are superior because they feel more joy and more grief than apes.
Your gorilla hearts are made of ice, Ivan,
she said, her eyes glittering.
Ours are made of fire.
Right now I would give all the yogurt raisins in all the world for a heart made of ice. Five Men. Bob heard from a rat, a reliable sort, that they tossed Stella's body into a garbage truck. It took five men and a forklift. Comfort. All day I try to comfort Ruby, but what can I say? That Stella had a good and happy life? That she lived as she was meant to live? That she died with those who loved her most nearby? At least the last is true. crying. Julia cries all evening, while her father sweeps and mops and dusts and cleans the toilets. When George sees Mac, he runs to him. I can only hear a few of his words. Vet. Should have. Wrong. Mac shrugs. His shoulders droop. He leaves without a word. When George wipes the fingerprints off my glass, his cheeks are wet. He doesn't meet my eyes. The one and only Ivan. When all the humans have left, I send Bob to check on Ruby. How is she? I ask when he returns.
She was shivering, Bob says. I tried to cover her with hay, and I told her not to worry because you were going to save her.
I glare at him. You told her that?
You promised Stella.
Bob lowers his head.
I wanted to make the kid feel better.
I shouldn't have made that promise, Bob. I just wanted... I point to Stella's domain, and for a moment it seems like I've forgotten how to breathe. I wanted to make Stella happy, I guess. But I can't save Ruby. I can't even save myself. I flop onto my back. The cement is always cold, but tonight it hurts. Bob leaps onto my belly.
You are the one and only Ivan,
he says.
Mighty Silverback.
He licks my chin, and he's not even checking for leftovers.
Say it,
Bob commands. I look away.
Say it, Ivan.
I don't answer, so Bob licks my nose until I can't stand it any longer. I am the one and only Ivan, I mutter.
And don't you ever forget it,
he says. When I gaze at the food court skylight, the moon Stella loved is shrouded in clouds. Once upon a time. All night, Ruby moans and sniffles. I pace my domain. I don't want to fall asleep in case she needs something.
Ivan,
Bob says gently,
get some sleep, please, for your sake and for mine.
Bob can't sleep unless he is on my stomach. I hear a stirring.
Ivan?
Ruby calls. I rush to my window. Ruby, are you all right?
I miss Aunt Stella,
Ruby sobs.
And I miss my mom, and my sisters, and my aunts, and my cousins, too.
I know, I say, because it's all I can think of. Ruby sniffles.
I can't sleep. Do you know any stories the way Aunt Stella did?
Not really, I admit. Stories were Stella's specialty.
Tell me a story about when you were little,
Ruby pleads. She puts her trunk between the bars.
Please, Ivan.
I scratch the back of my head. I don't remember things, Ruby, I admit.
It's true,
Bob says, trying to be helpful.
Ivan has a terrible memory. He's the opposite of an elephant.
Ruby lets out a long, shivery breath.
Oh, well, that's okay. Night, Ivan. And Bob.
I listen to Ruby's soft sobs for long, horrible minutes. Then I hear myself saying, once upon a time, there was a gorilla named Ivan. And slowly and deliberately, I try to remember. The Grunt. I was born in a place humans call Central Africa, in a dense rainforest so beautiful, no crayons could ever do it justice. Gorillas don't name their newborns right away, the way humans do. We get to know our babies first. We wait to see hints of what might yet be. When they saw how much she loved to chase me around the forest, my parents decided on my twin sister's name, Tag. Oh, how I loved to play tag with my sister. She was nimble, but when I got too close, she would leap onto my unsuspecting father. Then I would join her, and we would bounce on that tolerant belly until he gave us the grunt, the rooting pig sound that meant, enough! That game never got old, although my father might have disagreed. Mud. It didn't take long for my parents to find my name. All day long, every day, I made pictures. I drew on rocks and bark and my poor mother's back. I used the sap from leaves. I used the juice from fruit. But mostly, I used mud. And that is what they called me. Mud. To a human, mud might not sound like much. But to me, it was everything. Protector. My family, which humans call a troop, was just like any other gorilla family. There were 10 of us. My father, the silverback, my mother, and 3 other adult females. A juvenile male called a blackback, and 2 other young gorillas. Tag and I were the babies of the group. We squabbled now and then, as families will. But my father knew how to keep us in line with a simple scowl. And for the most part, we were happy to do what we were meant to do, to feed and forage and nap and play. My father was a master at leading us to the ripest fruit for our morning feast and the finest branches for our night nests. He was everything a silverback is meant to be, a guide, a teacher, a protector. And nobody could chest beat like my father. A perfect life. Gorilla babies and elephant babies and human babies are not so different, except that a gorilla gets to spend the day riding on his mother's back, like a cowboy on a horse. It's a pretty great system, from the baby's point of view. Slowly, carefully, a young gorilla begins to venture farther and farther away from the safety of his mother's arms. He learns the skills he will need as an adult, how to make a nest of branches, weave them tightly, or they will fall apart in the middle of the night, how to beat your chest, cup your palms to amplify the sound, how to go vining from tree to tree, don't let go, how to be kind, be strong, be loyal. Growing up gorilla is just like any other kind of growing up. You make mistakes. You play. You learn. You do it all over again. It was, for a while, a perfect life. The end. One day, a still day, when the hot air hummed, the humans came. Vine. After they captured my sister and me, they put us in a cramped, dark crate that smelled of urine and fear. Somehow I knew that in order to live, I had to let my old life die. But my sister could not let go of our home. It held her like a vine, stretching across the miles, comforting, strangling. We were still in our crate when she looked at me without seeing, and I knew that the vine had finally snapped. The Temporary Human. It was Mac who pried open that crate, Mac who bought me, and Mac who raised me like a human baby. I wore diapers. I drank from a bottle. I slept in human beds, sat in human chairs, listened while human words swarmed around me like angry bees. Mac had a wife back then. Helen was quick to laugh, but quick to anger, too, especially when I broke something, which was often. Here is what I broke while I lived with Mac and Helen. 1 crib, 46 glasses, 7 lamps, 1 couch, 3 shower curtains, 3 shower curtain rods, 1 blender, 1 TV, 1 radio, 3 toes, my own. I broke the blender when I squeezed 2 tubes of toothpaste and a bottle of glue into it. I broke my toes attempting to swing from a lamp fixture on the ceiling. I broke 46 glasses. Well, it turns out there are many ways to break a glass. Every weekend, Mac and Helen took me in their convertible to a fast food restaurant, where they ordered me French fries and a strawberry shake. Mac loved to see the expression on the cashier's face when he drove up and said, "Could I have some extra ketchup for my kid?" I went to baseball games, to the grocery store, to a movie theater, even to the circus. They didn't have a gorilla. I rode a little motorbike and blew out candles on a birthday cake. My life as a human was a glamorous one, although my parents, traditional sorts, would not have approved. Hunger. In my new life as a human, I was well tended. I ate lettuce leaves with Thousand Island dressing, and caramel apples, and popcorn with butter. My belly ballooned. But hunger, like food, comes in many shapes and colors. At night, lying alone in my poo pajamas, I felt hungry for the skilled touch of a grooming friend, for the cheerful grunts of a play fight, for the easy safety of my nearby troop foraging through shadows. "Remember what happened to Tag," I told myself. "Don't think about the jungle." Still, sometimes I lay awake, wishing for the warmth of another just like me, asleep in a night nest of tender prayer plant leaves. I liked having sips of soda poured into my mouth like a bubbling waterfall. But every now and then, I longed to search for a tender stalk of arrowroot, to feel the tease of a mango just out of reach. Still life. One day, Helen came home with something large and flat, wrapped in brown paper.
"Look what I bought today,"
she said excitedly as she tore off the paper.
"A painting to go over the living room couch."
"Fruit in a bowl," Max said with a shrug. "Big deal."
"This is fine art. It's called a still life," Helen explained. "And I think it's lovely."
I dashed over to examine the painting, marveling at the colors and shapes.
"See,"
said Max's wife.
"Ivan likes it."
"Ivan likes to roll up poop and throw it at squirrels," Mac said.
I couldn't take my eyes off the apples and bananas and grapes in the picture. They looked so real, so inviting, so edible. I reached out to touch a grape, and Helen slapped my hand.
"Bad boy, Ivan. Don't touch."
She jerked her thumb at Mac.
"Honey, go get a hammer and a nail, would you?"
While Mac and Helen were busy in the living room, I wandered into the kitchen. A cake covered in thick chocolate frosting sat on the counter. I like cake. Love it, in fact. But it wasn't eating I was thinking about. It was painting. The frosting peaked and dipped like waves on a tiny pond. It looked rich and gooey, dark and smooth. It looked like mud. I scooped up a handful of frosting. I scooped up another. I headed to the refrigerator door. It was perfect. An empty, white, waiting canvas. The frosting wasn't as easy to work with as jungle mud. It was stickier, and of course, more tempting to eat. But I kept at it. I scraped off every last bit of that frosting. I may have eaten a little cake, too. I don't remember what I was trying to paint. A banana, most likely. I suppose I knew I was going to get in trouble. But at that moment, I just didn't care. I wanted to make something, anything, the way I used to. I wanted to be an artist again. Punishment. I soon learned that humans can screech even louder than monkeys. After that, I was never allowed in the kitchen. Babies. Back in those days, the Big Top Mall was smaller. It had a pony ride, a wooden train that bustled around the parking lot, a few bedraggled parrots, and a surly spider monkey. But when Mac brought me, a baby gorilla dressed in a crisp tuxedo, to the mall, everything changed. People came from far and wide to have their pictures taken with me. They brought me blocks and a toy guitar. They held me in their laps. Once I even held a baby in mine. She was small and slippery. Bubbles flowed from her lips. She squeezed my fingers. Her rear was puffy with padding. Her legs bowed like bent twigs. I made a face. She made a face. I grunted. She grunted. I was so afraid she would fall that I squeezed her tightly, and her mother yanked her away. I wonder if my mother ever worried about dropping us. We always held on, but that's easier to do when your mother is furry. Human babies are an ugly lot, but their eyes are like our babies' eyes. Too big for their faces, and for the world. Beds. One day, after many weeks of loud talking, Helen packed a bag and slammed the front door and never came back. I don't know why. I never know the why of humans. That night I slept with Mac in his bed. My old nests were woven of leaves and sticks and shaped like his bathtub, cool green cocoons. Mac's bed, like mine, was flat, hot, without sticks or stars. Still, he made a sleeping sound like the rumble my father used to make when all was well, a sound from deep inside his belly. My place. Mac grew sullen. I grew bigger. I became what I was meant to be. Too large for chairs, too strong for hugs, too big for human life. I tried to stay calm, to move with dignity. I did my best to eat daintily. But human ways are hard to learn, especially when you're not a human. When I saw my new domain, I was thrilled, and who wouldn't have been? It had no furniture to break. No glasses to smash, no toilets to drop Mac's keys into. It even had a tire swing. I was relieved to have my own place. Somehow I didn't realize I'd be here quite so long. Now I drink Pepsi, eat old apples, watch reruns on TV. But many days I forget what I am supposed to be. Am I a human? Am I a gorilla? Humans have so many words, more than they truly need. Still, they have no name for what I am. 9,876 days. Ruby is finally asleep. I watch her chest rise and fall. Bob, too, is snoring. But my mind is still racing. For perhaps the first time ever, I've been remembering. It's an odd story to remember, I have to admit. My story has a strange shape, a stunted beginning, an endless middle. I count all the days I've lived with humans. Gorillas count as well as anyone, although it's not a particularly useful skill to have in the wild. I've forgotten so many things, and yet I always know precisely how many days I've been in my domain. I take one of the magic markers Julia gave me. I make an X, a small one, on my painted jungle wall. I make more X's, and more. I make an X for every day of my life with humans, until there are 9,876 X's marching across my wall, like a parade of ugly insects. A visit. It's almost morning when I hear steps. It's Mac. He has a sharp smell. He weaves as he walks. He stands next to my domain. His eyes are red. He is staring out the window at the empty parking lot.
"Ivan, my man," he mumbles. "Ivan."
He presses his forehead against the glass.
"We've been through a lot, you and me."
A new beginning. We don't see Mac for 2 days. When he returns, he doesn't talk about Stella. Mac says he is anxious to teach Ruby some tricks. He says the billboard is bringing in more visitors. He says it's time for a new beginning. All afternoon and into the evening, Mac works with Ruby. Ruby's feet are looped with rope so that she cannot run. A heavy chain hangs off her neck. Mac shows her Stella's ball, her pedestal, her stool. He introduces her to Snickers. When Ruby obeys Mac, he gives her a cube of sugar or a bit of dried apple. When she doesn't, he yells and kicks at the sawdust. When George and Julia arrive, Mac is still training Ruby. Julia sits on a bench and watches them. She draws a little, but mostly she keeps her eyes on Ruby. Bob watches too. He's hiding in the corner of my domain under Not Tag. It's raining outside, and Bob does not like damp feet. Ruby trudges behind Mac, her head drooping. Endlessly they circle the ring. Sometimes Mac slaps her flank with his hand. Suddenly Ruby jerks to a stop. Mac pulls the chain hard, but Ruby refuses to move.
"Come on, Ruby,"
Mac is almost pleading.
"What is your problem?"
"She's exhausted," I say to myself. "That's the problem." Mac groans.
"Idiot, elephant."
"Idiot, human,"
Bob mutters. "Walk, Ruby," I say, although I know she's too far away to hear me. "Do what he says."
"Walk,"
Mac commands.
"Now."
Ruby doesn't walk. She plops her rump on the sawdust floor.
"I think maybe she's tired,"
Julia says. Mac wipes his forehead with the back of his arm.
"Yeah, I know, we're all tired."
He pushes Ruby with the heel of his boot. She ignores him. George looks over from the food court where he is wiping off tables.
"Mac," he yells, "maybe you should call it a day. I'll close up."
Mac yanks on Ruby's chain. She's as anchored as a tree trunk. He pulls harder,